This is The State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. LGBT rights have expanded more in Latin America than anywhere else in the North Atlantic region, according to a new report released by UNC Chapel Hill. Entire countries like Argentina and Uruguay have legalized same-sex marriage and expanded health services for LGBT individuals. But the region is also home to countries like Jamaica, that is one of the most dangerous places in the world to be gay. My guest today will help illustrate and illuminate the reasons behind these great discrepancies. They're in town for a panel discussion at the UNC FedEx Global Education Center this evening, and they join me in the studio today. Javier Corrales is a political science professor at Amherst College, and he authored the new report. Javier, welcome. Good to have you here talking with us today. Welcome.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Tell us more about this. Give us an overview, LGBT status in Latin America and the Caribbean. It varies widely, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. You find countries that are true world champions when it comes to legislating bills that are progressive and pro-LGBT rights. But you also find places, countries, or communities where LGBT communities are completely marginalized and suffering enormous injustices. So there's a huge variation in the extent to which LGBT rights have expanded within the region.
Now, tell us about the more progressive countries. Who are
sure.
they?
Well, you know, one could probably say Argentina, which has same-sex marriage, gay adoptions, as well as one of the most progressive gender identities laws in the world. Uruguay comes next. One could perhaps add Brazil, capital city of Mexico, Mexico City, and a few other cities. Those would be the ones that have progressed the most. Colombia does not have marriage equality, but it has a court that has produced some of the most progressive rulings on behalf of gay rights, gay relationships. And there the problem is that the court is moving much faster than the legislature.
But so what are the least progressive places? We mentioned Jamaica in the introduction.
Not to be too much of a generalist, but essentially small Caribbean islands or Central American countries tend to be the ones that are not doing so well. It's a real paradox that the English-speaking Caribbean happens to have indices of discrimination and lack of appropriate LGBT protections almost to the same degree as Africa. And the reason it's interesting is because they're very democratic. They have strong democratic institutions and pretty stable governments. And yet, when it comes to LGBT rights, they're lagging behind. Central America is not too far.
All right, so we'll talk about this because it is nuanced and, as you say, paradoxical. There are also trends in opposing directions, and so I think we're going to get into detail about why some of this is true and some of the paradoxes, how it's not universally true or generally true. And I'm joined now by two other panelists here for the event at UNC's Global Education Center, I should say, tonight. Angelica Lozano is a politician and a lawyer and the first publicly gay person elected to the Colombian Chamber of Representatives. Angelica, welcome. Good to have you here.
Muchas gracias. Feliz de estar acá.
Great to have you. And Javion Nelson, a prominent LGBT activist in Jamaica and the executive director of the Jamaica Youth Advocacy Network. Javion, good to have you here
Thank
as well.
Thank you for having me.
Let me start with you because we talked about Jamaica. We named it as one of the least progressive. Tell us about the situation there.
Well, the situation, human rights for LGBT people in Jamaica continues to be one of the most pressing human rights issues locally. There, over the last few years, we've received a number of reports to JFLAG, one of the most prominent LGBT rights organizations where I work. For the last 3 years, for example, we've had over 300 reports from people who've reported incidents of discrimination, intimidation, threats, sexual violence, extortion, beatings, that kind of thing, displacement, which is a growing and common issue. And within that, over the last 6 years, we've gotten about 100 or more reports of displacement, whether temporary or permanent. And within that number of people who are being affected, we recognize that a large number of them are young males between 18 and 29, which sort of follows the pattern of crime and violence in general. And from our reports that we receive, we recognize as well that the patterns of discrimination and violence against the LGBT community seemingly follow the same pattern of national crime and violence data. So the parishes of Kingston and St. Andrew, which is the capital, St. Catherine, St. James, St. Anne, are the parishes where you find that most of the discrimination reported to us are most common. The other thing I'd say is that there are a number of other things which aren't being discussed. For example, the palpable level of fear that people within the community go through their daily lives and how they decide to navigate their different societies. And so one can almost escape the homophobia if you are privileged enough by your social class, your level of education, where you live, or your social capital. But for the vast majority of Jamaicans, which is a very poor country, despite being classified by the World Bank as an upper middle income country, the vast majority of people are poor. And so they do not necessarily have the capabilities to sort of escape and to protect themselves in a bubble.
And there have been recent surveys that indicate a majority of Jamaicans have very strong views about LGBT individuals. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. So in the 2012 National Survey on Attitudes and Perceptions towards Same-Sex Relationship, which we commissioned, we found that about 80% of Jamaicans have very strong views about same-sex relationships. They are also very much opposed to any sort of amendment or repeal of the Bugre Law, which is found in the Offences Against a Persons Act, Sections 76, 77, and 79. And from the survey, we realized that the top three reasons people give is that, one, God might destroy the country, gays might then begin to attack young boys, and that homosexuals will begin to flaunt their sexuality on the public. However, very encouragingly, we saw 37% of persons interviewed, and it was a national survey, so you could say one third of the population, saying that the government is not doing enough to protect LGBT people from discrimination and violence. And so one could sort of argue that although there are strong perceptions about LGBT people, there is some growing level of acceptance and tolerance that the government, as duty bearers, are expected to protect LGBT people through social protection mechanisms, through the police force, etc. And so I think that's encouraging enough and room enough for the government to begin to do much more.
And there still remains. So you are encouraged by a trend that shows a willingness on the part of some people or an expressed desire to protect LGBT communities. That's growing. Still, 60% don't feel that way, and it's led to some horrific, horrific cases of violence. Maybe you can just describe some of what happened.
Yeah, absolutely. So in 2013, for example, there was, which was one of the most recent and most prominent incidents of violence perpetrated against someone within the community, a teen who incidentally was displaced by the parents, when he or she was about 14, was living on the streets, working sometimes as a sex worker, went to a party, and that teen, who went by the name of Dwayne Jones, also known as Gully Queen, was murdered after being identified by someone he or she knew at that party, who said to others, apparently, that this person is not female as being dressed. And there was an incident with that teen and others. There are a number of others. I've had friends, for example, who've been victims of bullying. In about 2 years ago, one of my friends at the university, he woke up to bottles broken at his door with a sign on his door because they perceived him to be LGBT. And he was openly very expressive about his sexual orientation. There are a number of other incidents that have been perpetrated against people. We see, for example, there's an entire community, for example, of homeless people who were just recently living in one of the city's most prominent business district. At least 30 LGBT people, largely young people, who were living in the sewer. They had nowhere to go. They were forced to live and work on the streets. A number of them were sex workers as well, who were commonly harassed. They were turned out of their homes by families and parents and community members, which seems to be a very growing issue as well, which as an organization we are particularly concerned about, because in 1 year, for example, we got 12 reports, that was in 2012, 12 reports of displacement, and of all 12, they were all young males under 18 years old. So it shows that there's lots of discrimination still happening, despite some level of tolerance and improvements.
Angelica Lozano, your experience in Colombia, particularly as a member of the Chamber of Representatives, is quite different. Tell us your story.
Mi historia personal.
Sí. Yeah, your personal story.
Yo hago política hace 20 años, voy a cumplir 39 años de edad, pero llevo la mitad de la vida en el activismo de muchas causas.
She has been doing political life most of her life, and she's devoted to a number of causes.
Soy abogada y he estado en procesos de búsqueda de una alternativa política, diferente al bipartidismo tradicional, derechos humanos, nuestro país es... viven una larga guerra y que estamos negociando y ojalá concluyamos pronto.
I'm a lawyer and I have always tried to find an alternative political response in my country to the many problems we have, including a long civil armed conflict, and I'm trying to figure out ways in which we can change our two-party system to find new solutions.
Y he tenido el honor de estar abiertamente en la política como líder y activista de la igualdad por diversidad sexual.
And I'm honored to be a leader in the community as a representative of openness and sexual diversity in my country.
Let me interrupt your story for just a moment to ask you what it was that made you feel comfortable about coming out and how you think it was possible for you to be elected as an out individual in Colombia.
Porque es importante.
¿Qué hizo que te sintieras lista o cómoda para poder salir del closet en el momento que lo hiciste? ¿Qué te hizo tomar esa decisión?
Fue un largo proceso. Yo fui alcaldesa de Chapinero, uno de los 20 distritos de Bogotá.
It was a long process. I was mayor of Chapinero, which is a district in Bogotá.
No estaba en el closet, pero tampoco era públicamente... alcaldesa con mi vida privada al público.
I wasn't fully out, but I wasn't exactly public and open.
Sin embargo, ahí creé el primer centro comunitario LGBT del país y adelantamos una política pública como un tema de ciudadanía y de derechos sin mencionar ni ocultar mi propia orientación.
So we established the first LGBT community center and we began to promote several initiatives, municipal initiatives on behalf of LGBT rights without hiding or declaring my sexual orientation.
Esta realidad generó una reacción de los opositores a la igualdad y cuando pasé, di otro paso y fui concejal de Bogotá, asumí públicamente, no fue salir del closet, no fue necesario, pero ahí sí me incluí en primera persona en la causa de defensa desde el Consejo de Bogotá.
These initiatives produced a serious backlash, people opposing these initiatives, and at that point I had already changed jobs, I was now a council in Bogotá, and I decided that the time was right for me to come out to defend these causes against this backlash.
Fue como un proceso natural y por los en parte la oposición a la igualdad con abuso de poder desde una autoridad que se llama Procuraduría General, es como un ombudsman nacional. Me lancé al Congreso de la República en total apertura en temas LGBT y oposición a él. Y el pueblo me eligió. Luego hay un reconocimiento por dar la lucha y dar la cara por los que están en el closet.
So then I decided to go bigger and try to go for a seat in the National Congress. There is a particular branch of the government, the Attorney General's Office in particular, that is decidedly against LGBT rights. And I figured that what made sense for me and for the movement at that point is to bring the battle to Congress and for me to help in that effort. And that's how I ended up in Congress.
If I may pose a question to you at this moment, Javier, and ask the difference between, it was clearly difficult for Angelica to make that choice and then to do it in a kind of a staged process, but it was possible, and it sounds like that might be impossible in Jamaica. What are the differences? What's happening in these different countries that allows a little more progressive thought in some and less in others?
Well, in many Spanish-speaking countries, you have, number one, very strong social movements that are very connected to the issue of democratizing the country. They don't feel that democracy has been settled, but it has to be constructed. And LGBT movements have been able to make strong links with those causes, which are widespread causes. So a narrow-based cause like LGBT can hook with a broader cause of democratizing the country, and that helps. Perhaps the other reason is that you need to have very progressive and independent courts. Colombia has that. The English-speaking Caribbean tends to have those courts, so that's not one difference. But not all Latin American countries have strong courts the way that Colombia has and offer some protection. And then I would say the last thing is the role of religion. And more importantly, what we have found is that not all religions are as homophobic. Not all branches of Christianity are as homophobic, that there is a ranking in levels of intolerance. And we find that within Christianity, it's one branch of Protestantism that tends to be very homophobic and very vocal and very active about that. And therefore, you should see less favorable environments for LGBT rights where you have a stronger evangelical presence. And that is definitely a major difference between the English-speaking Caribbean and Colombia. In fact, the English-speaking Caribbean and small Central American nations are very similar in that they have very strong evangelical communities, very active, where both the clergy as well as the churchgoers have very strong opinions, intolerant opinions. And Colombia does not have a high level of evangelical presence.
We are talking today about the status of LGBT rights across the Caribbean and Latin America today on The State of Things. Among my guests today is Javier Corrales, who is a professor of political science at Amherst and the author of an LGBT rights and representation report issued by UNC Chapel Hill. You talked about these coalitions that LGBT rights and political connections, they are also fraught that when LGBT rights groups connect with AIDS activism, they find it works to a point, but then there's a moment at which you have to decouple, right?
Yes. I mean, this is becoming very obvious when it comes to connections with political parties or connections with state bureaucracies. This is a dilemma of democratic politics. You need your allies and you have to work out deals. But in politics, sometimes these deals involve certain compromises. And there comes a time when these partnerships start to be problematic. I have always argued that social movements need to work together with political parties. But political parties are necessary, but they're not always saintly. And so they might create problems for some of these movements that are a bit more principled in their views. And so this is a dilemma. You have to work, you're a principled organization, and you have to work with political operators. And that is not always going to produce a happy marriage.
I have just a little bit of time left, but we're talking about this as kind of a regional issue, but clearly there are differences, big differences country by country. Is there anything that can be learned or any kind of connections that can be made, coalitions that can be built across national borders, or are these simply unique national problems?
Well, they're both. Both the defense of gay rights as well as the fight against gay rights are both now international movements. So it's impossible to imagine waging these struggles in isolation from international conditions. Nevertheless, LGBT activists need to understand the local environment, the issues that work, the institutions that are open and the institutions that are not open. So it's to excuse the cliche, but it's definitely a global issue.
I want to thank all of you for being on the program. Javier Corrales is a political science professor at Amherst and the author of a new report on LGBT rights. Javion Nelson is a prominent LGBT activist in Jamaica. And Helica Lozano is a Colombian politician and lawyer who is the first publicly gay person elected to the Colombian Chamber of Representatives. Thank all of you for being on the program.
Thank you.
Also, there are town meetings. These folks are in town for a panel tonight, UNC's FedEx Global Education Center, and you can find out more about it at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, a preview of this weekend's Art of Cool Jazz Festival with Mad Satta. Stay tuned.